rozhovoru Britských listů bych vám, vážení televizní diváci, chtěl představit Julie Marie Seklénorovou, někdejší studentku českých studií české literatury na Glasgow University, která po absolutoriu byla výzkumnicí, doktorantkou na slavném londýnském Courtauld Institute, což je instituce zabývající se uměním, a vypracovala tam pozoruhodnou doktorskou práci, v níž se zabývá satirickými časopisy meziválečného období v letech 1918, 1938 nebo 1939 v Rakousku a v Československu. Julia Seklénorová je Rakušanka a v současné době pracuje na Masarykově univerzitě v Brně v Institutu dějin umění a má nebo je součástí grantu Evropské unie ERC, který se právě zaměřuje na studium meziválečné architektury, umění a tak obecně. Dobrý den, Julie, ještě jsem chtěl říct, vážení televizní diváci, jak už se to děje často s našimi mezinárodními odborníky, oni mluví česky velmi dobře, ale když jde o televizní rozhovor, tak prostě řeknou, nemohli bychom to raději dělat anglicky, takže zase od této chvíle budou následovat titulky. Julia, actually I was really stunned by that doctoral thesis, because one of the things that I was actually fascinated in it as a Czech was that we in the Czech Republic do not really know very much about the history of Austria after the disintegration of the Austro-Hungarian Empire in 1918. Basically, everybody stopped being interested. And of course, Austria, after the disintegration of the empire, really got into serious difficulties. I mean, it lost quite a lot of its industry because much of its industry was on the territory of what then became Czechoslovakia. But since we do not follow the history of Austria within sort of the interwar period, I was really quite stunned when you explained that it was really quite a fascist state long before the arrival of Hitler in Germany and Nazism. What, am I right? Can you explain this a little bit?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I think that was one of the fascinating things actually about that I found out during writing, that there are kind of two national separate histories. And after 1918, I think both countries, at least initially, were so concerned with writing their own national histories that there was not much contact. Mm-hmm. And in Austria, I think it's true because the only kind of known, let's say, socialist governed or more progressive place was Vienna. And the part, the kind of small rest of the country was mostly rural, and that was heavily dominated by conservative politics.
This is actually quite interesting. If I may interrupt, I went before the pandemic, occasionally went skiing in Austria, and I actually read one article by some English commentator who was really quite cynical, and he basically said that Vienna was a fantastic cosmopolitan city to this very day. Which used to be a kind of metropolis of a 60 million nation, but unfortunately it really became kind of lost after 1918. So you had on the one hand this cosmopolitan city, and then you have now these, he said cynically, skeeto operators in the mountains who are basically fascists. And so that in Austria there is this kind of dichotomy. And in fact, in one of the villages where I was skiing, I forget the name, there was a shop on the main street a couple of years ago, which displays Nazi insignia, Nazi uniforms. Amazing. So anyway, sorry, I'm interrupting. Go on.
No, that's fine. Actually, this is not the first time that I've heard things like that. So, but I mean, of course, it's both a bit exacerbated those divisions. But I think that it is true that now, and that kind of development started in 1918 when Austria became so small, that it kind of developed this dynamic between the conservative countryside and the more progressive city. But at the same time, after 1918, Vienna was also really seen as a lost place because it didn't seem to fit anymore because it was an imperial capital. And at the time, the population of Vienna kind of shrunk, but it was still about 2 million and the rest of the country was only kind of two thirds of that. So it was a really, really huge city for a small country.
One of the things that I remember reading, which stunned me before we get to the caricatures, was that actually, when was it, in the middle of the 1930s, Austria promulgated a law which banned married women from actually taking up employment. 1936, was it? Amazing.
35 or 36, but that was when the fascist government led by Engelbert Dollfuss came in power in 33, 34. And after the economic crisis, there was huge unemployment rates. So one way of trying to curb it was to prohibit women from working. So as soon as they got married, they had to stop working and kind of stay at home, which kind of worked also with the fascist ideology. So it was,
Let's concentrate on the main topic of your thesis, which was basically caricatures in Czechoslovakia and in Austria. And Czechoslovakia was very kind of left of center. Anyway, go on. Tell us something about these caricatures.
So I looked at satirical magazines. That was the kind of main thing. And I looked at Austrian ones from Vienna and Czech ones from Prague mostly. And overall, I considered 14 different ones. And I think that the narratives are kind of quite divided, as I mentioned, in caricatures in Austria when it comes to the interwar years. Are mostly known as being very conservative, very anti-Semitic, kind of very to the right. Whereas in Czechoslovakia, they are mostly remembered as kind of very progressive and linked to the avant-garde, and also many artists, maybe not necessarily to the far left, but people like Josef Lada, of course, and Karel Čapek. They created lots of magazines. Karel Čapek also had his own magazine that he founded in 1918, Nebojsa. Uh-huh. So there are two different kind of narratives about what caricatures were like in the interwar years, in the Czech and in the Austrian context. But I think that generally we like to focus in on kind of specifics, but they were also kind of fairly bland and kind of basic entertainment in the Czech lands. As I'm just trying to think, but there were no really any more progressive attempts in Austria, so it doesn't quite equal out. So overall, the Czech ones were more progressive. But then magazines like Humoristické listy, which had existed for a long time, they kind of also took a very mediocre route, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Humoristické listy during the Hilsner affair at the end of the 19th century were really anti-Semitic. There was one picture in them on the front page where a Jew was hanged, and under it it said "Vis provádění málo kdy," hanging which isn't happening too often, regrettably. Which is actually amazing that this could actually be published. But anyway, could you give us some examples concretely of the difference of something which is absolutely characteristic for Austria in the interwar period and for Czechoslovakia in the interwar period?
I guess I could outline the most, the best known magazines. And in the Czech one, there's a kind of, you could call it the triumvirate of Czech caricature, which is three people, Antonín Belc, Adolf Hofmeister and František Bidlo. Mm-hmm. And they were kind of left-wing young artists. They were kind of connected to the avant-garde, the Debreczil group, and they were very active in publishing different caricatures exhibited internationally. And the best-known instance for the caricatures is the International Exhibition of Caricature, which took place in Prague in 1934. And there they really showcased their work, as in it was very kind of gentle but had a very sharp humor to it. Especially Hofmeister, he was really known for a kind of very, very simple visual language, sort of very single lines, and which really contrasted with the examples from progressive German artists like John Hartfield, for an example. And in Austria, I should add that all of those three mentioned artists, they also contributed to Simplicus, which was a magazine that kind of followed up from the German magazine Simplicissimus, which had to flee into exile in 1933 with the National Socialist takeover in Germany. And they founded a kind of bilingual progressive magazine, Simplicus, which came out in separate Czech and German editions. And Bidlo Pelz and Hofmeister were really engaged in kind of making caricature a really, making really strong anti-fascist statements with caricatures. And in Austria, on the other hand, probably the best known example is the Kikeriki, which was also a very established magazine from the late 19th century. But that was showing nationalist, socialist sympathies quite early on. And they really sort of from the mid-1920s onwards really built on anti-Semitic caricatures. They were also often published anonymously. So I suppose also in a way of not of making it a kind of part of the magazine overall and not tying it to a specific artist. And that was really directed to a really broad population, whereas the more modern magazines, like Simplicus, they were kind of more directed towards a more educated readership. So I think that you could say that the more crude and the more brutal caricatures became, the more they were directed at a mass audience, whereas the more defined ones were also more for better educated readership.
This is really quite frightening in a way, because we don't realize that actually Austria was really quite anti-Semitic and hostile to Jews long before the arrival of Nazism. And one interesting question to finish maybe, because we'll have to be slowly finishing, is that how did actually Austria emerge from this horror? Because it wasn't denazified after the Second World War, was it? But I wouldn't say that necessarily in this day and age it is a Nazi country. Probably not, even though there are extreme right-wing populists there as well. But Vienna is an extremely left-wing, very tolerant city, isn't it? And generally, apart from those sort of Nazi Skeeto operators, it's a fairly reasonable country, isn't it, these days? What would you say as an Austrian? No?
No, I mean, I guess everyone has issues with the local governments, but I wouldn't say that Austria is a very kind of progressive country at all. I think it's quite conservative. Vienna, again, is different. And so I think that maybe not to the same extremes, but many of the dynamics that developed after 1918 are still kind of present. With denazification, as you say, it didn't really take place until, of course, the Waldheim Affair in the 1980s. So since then, things are moving, but I think that there is also a strong resistance. And as everywhere in Central Europe, I mean, the right is on the rise.
That is depressing. Vážení televizní diváci, to byla Julia Maria Seklena, odbornice na karikatury československé a rakouské z meziválečného období. Děkujeme vám za pozornost. Naschledanou.
Thank you.